Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Sherlock's In Conversation podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, we're going to be talking about sleep, because if there's one topic consistently making the headlines in the wellness world, it's sleep or our lack of it. Getting through the days in just a few hours sleep used to be seen as a bit of a badge of honor, but with recent studies linking sleep deprivation to everything from diabetes to depression, we all want to know how to get more sleep. So whether you take ages to fall asleep or wake in the early hours with insomnia, millions of us are struggling to get that good night's sleep. So I am hugely excited to be joined by Dr. Katharina Liedeler and Dr. Guy Meadows, both sleep experts from the renowned Sleep School, who are going to be answering your sleep questions, from the signs you could do with more sleep, what affects your sleep patterns, and ultimately how to go to sleep and stay asleep. I feel like I've said sleep many, many times in the last few minutes. Welcome, Kat and Guy. I mean, it's the hot topic. It's such a hot topic, isn't it?
It is. And it's been a hot topic for a decade. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing, because we definitely need more sleep.
Is our sleep getting worse?
Good question. I think for some people, it definitely is. And interestingly, for some people, it may get a little better. So it's a mixed bag.
I would add on to that as well, that obviously we're recording this, you know, as we've been going through a global pandemic. And actually, Sleep School did some research at the beginning of this year, which showed that 49% of the UK population were experiencing worse sleep as a result of COVID-19. So we certainly know that COVID has brought an extra element of sort of stress and worry and lots of the factors which can disturb sleep.
Okay, so no surprises there. Let's start with why sleep is so important. What does it do for us? Why do we need it so badly?
I've got this phrase which I like, which is sleep is the single most powerful performance enhancing health provider behavior known to humankind, which kind of sums up that sleep impacts us in the short term. You know, sort of every day it helps us to do what we're doing right now, to be focused and attentive, to think up great questions, to communicate, etc. It helps us to manage our mood on a daily basis as well. So that's, you know, super important for us to be able to communicate again as humans, you know, to work together as groups. But then it also helps us in the long term as well. And as you sort of touched on, it's everything from, you know, sort of washing our brains on a nightly basis and helping to reduce our risk of, say, Alzheimer's and dementia. It's helping to manage our blood glucose levels and reducing our risk of diabetes, helping to lower our blood pressure, keep our hearts healthy, even manage our appetite hormones to help us to manage our weight. So sleep is, yeah, it's pretty, there's not a single biological process that sleep doesn't touch in some way.
So, Kat, how does a bad night's sleep or consistently bad night's sleep affect our body kind of in real time?
Yeah, in a way, it turns upside down everything Guy was just saying, right? Starting with sort of your alertness and attentiveness, right? This ability to concentrate and focus your attention, shift your attention deliberately. All of that sort of goes out of the window. To make sound decisions, sort of your sort of awareness of what's going on, weighing things up, gets a knock. And I think particularly important is the mood, is how we feel within ourselves and how we interact with the world around us. And we see sort of aggression going up or irritability, but also withdrawing from others, which right now where we are sort of still in some kind of lockdown, you know, where we are physically isolated from one another, you know, that can make matters worse and we feel even more lonely. And that then can also have a knock-on effect on maybe depression or anxiety disorders. So there's also a relationship between poor sleep and mental health disorders. So there's, yeah, an awful lot gets sort of knocked back.
And why do some people sleep badly and others don't? Is it genetic, you know, what is it that determines whether you're going to be a good sleeper or not?
There are lots of different things, right? Genetics probably play a role, sort of a disposition. And we see that sort of poor sleep and mental health, as I said, depression, anxiety disorder, schizophrenia, for example, they go hand in hand. And so, you know, either the depression leading to the poor sleep or the other way around. Then certainly our sort of ability to cope with stress and what we experience as stressful, that can vary between people, right? Different stressors, and we may cope with one stressor but less well with another. So that can have a knock-on effect. Then there seems to be a difference also between the sexes. So women also have a risk of, you know, higher risk of depression and anxiety, also suffer more from poor sleep. So that plays a role. And that can then also, you know, something like pregnancy, puberty, menopause or transition.
I mean, that's basically every stage of life for women. So that's not great.
Yep.
Guy, what is the optimum amount of sleep for the average woman? You know, obviously 8 hours is the kind of elusive number. Is that correct?
8 hours is the number that we hear all of the time. The reality is that how much sleep we need is in part determined by our genetics, and it varies from individual to individual. So it will be a range. And so anywhere between sort of 6 and 9 hours should encapsulate around about sort of 97% of the population. So the vast majority of us, you know, will be getting, you know, somewhere between that and waking up feeling refreshed. If you're not waking up feeling refreshed, it suggests then perhaps you're not getting that right amount. You know, what we often find is that some people might say, I've read that I'm meant to be getting 8 hours, but I get 6 and I feel absolutely fine. Well, if you feel fine, then just roll with that.
Okay, so you don't have to be too caught up in what everybody's saying about it then.
No, exactly.
Let's take the 8 hours as an example. How do you know if the 8 hours sleep you're getting are good quality hours? You know, I sleep for around 8 hours a night, but I can't be sure that, you know, I'm really getting what I need in those hours. We've all heard of REM, kind of how long should that last, and how do you know if you're getting the quality of sleep that you need?
Okay, so again, you know, the simplest metric to know whether you're getting good quality sleep, again, is you know, are you waking up feeling refreshed? But if we dive into what happens when we sleep, we've got three different stages of sleep, so we'll which we cycle through. So we'll go from wakefulness into light sleep, and then into deep sleep, and then into rapid eye movement sleep. And then we'll have sort of a brief momentary awakening, and that's the end of a cycle, which lasts about an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then we'll go into, we'll repeat that cycle. And what we'll see is that proportion of light and deep to rapid eye movement sleep, so what we call non-rapid eye movement sleep and rapid eye movement sleep, will change throughout the night. So you'll get the vast majority of your sort of non-REM or light in, or sort of deeper sleep in the first third of the night, and then you'll get your more rapid eye movement sleep in the second part of the night. And so what we're looking for is complete cycles of light, deep and REM sleep. So, and again, this is really important because, you know, a lot of our clients will come to us and saying they want 100% deep sleep. You know, they almost want to sort of swim in the stuff. And and that's where actually we realize that we only spend about 20% of the night roughly in deep sleep, about 30% perhaps in rapid eye movement sleep, and about 50% in light sleep. And each phase, each stage of sleep has really important biological processes. So it's about getting the correct amount of each stage of sleep rather than honing in on one particular one.
So a good night's sleep isn't 8 solid hours of sleep. You haven't failed if you've woken up a few times in the night briefly.
Absolutely. And that is one of the key messages that we give to our insomnia clients, because so many of them have in their heads this myth that they need to put their head on the pillow at this sort of, you know, this point here. They need to wake up here and there must be nothing in between. You know, they must have sort of. And the reality is for the vast majority of us, we will have these brief awakenings. And certainly as we get older as well, we'll, you know, sort of, it becomes harder and harder to sew those cycles together as well. And so there's going to be more natural breaks.
Okay, you've made me feel better already. Kat, is there such a thing as too much sleep?
There is, that there could be. So we know that too little sleep has all these adverse effects that we started talking about in the beginning. And too much sleep basically does the same. So there's sort of, if you want to draw a graph of sleep duration, that's got a U shape and the sweet spot is in the middle. And that's sort of, you know, 7 to 9 hours thereabouts. Anything that's less or much more can also lead to poor sleep. Now, too much sleep in our society is though something we don't often come across because of 24/7 society. So it is rare. However, yes, there is something like too much sleep, and that's detrimental. to your health.
As you say, I'm not sure too many of us need to worry about that, do we? There's that old adage that hours sleep you have before midnight are the most valuable. Is that true? Is there a time cutoff? You know, or no, it's basically what you just said about the wave.
There isn't. So we all have a body clock, sort of a biological master clock that sits in the brain, and that sets the timing for literally every process that is happening in your body, including when you sleep and when you're awake. And that differs between all of us, right? And it differs across our lifespan as well. And so there is no sort of one size fits all sleep time, as there is no one size fits all sleep duration. The key is that you find out what is my personal sleep time, my sleep window, and then sleep within that. But sometimes, you know, we see clients in the clinic who go to bed too early and then get worked up because they can't fall asleep. And that's then sort of can contribute to their insomnia. But it's partially because they've gone to bed too early before their body clock said, hey, it's now sleep time.
I'm a really good sleeper, and I find if I relax in bed for even an hour before, that's the time I can't sleep. It's really noticeable if you spend too much time in bed. If you are somebody then who naturally wakes up really early, is there anything you can do to change your body clock?
So you can't willingly, you know, in the same way that you can't will yourself to sleep, you can't sort of will yourself to sort of suddenly shift and become a late type. But you can, there is some movement sort of in the system. And one way you can do this is by changing your light exposure, changing in a way when the lights come on, when you open your eyes, and when the lights go off, i.e. when you close your eyes. If you are someone who wakes up really early and you want to come a bit later, what you would try to do is in the evening actually make it really bright. So go against the advice that's generally given of dimming everything down. You want it brighter. And then in the morning, you want to avoid light as much as you can. And then that is something you have to keep doing. And of course, your whole activity rhythm, or when you start eating, when you finish eating, that all has to shift accordingly. And that then can be a way of shifting your clock.
Sounds like quite a lot of work. How do you know if you need more sleep?
I think, you know, coming back to what I was saying earlier, that you know, that simple measure is if you're waking up feeling, you know, unrefreshed, if you're finding that you're struggling during the day, if you're finding it hard to focus and concentrate, you're experiencing mood swings or cravings, etc.
You know, I think most people, when their alarm goes off and wakes them up in the middle of a sleep, it's quite hard to know whether you've had a good night's sleep or not, because you've just been shaken awake. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, so, well, that's a really good sort of indication of perhaps what's happening for you, or maybe for many of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, in an ideal state, we would be hoping that we keep a regular sleep-wake cycle. So going to bed and getting up at roughly the same time. And we'd hope that our body clock was attuned to that, so that actually we wouldn't need an alarm clock. So what that would mean, because the problem with an alarm clock is it's alarming, it's waking you up out of perhaps a middle of a sleep cycle, because it has no respect for your sleep architecture. So ideally what you want to be doing is coming out of the sleep cycle at the end of that sleep phase. Okay. And that's where you're going to wake up and be most refreshed.
Right.
But everyone's going to have a period also, it's worth noting, of what we call sleep inertia. So sleep inertia is that grogginess period of wakefulness between sort of the moment that you wake up to when you actually start feeling sort of, you know, ready to face the world. And for some people that can be 5 minutes, and other people it can be 4 hours, but the average for most people is about 30 minutes.
Okay, interesting. And that presumably changes as you get older. I remember being a teenager and, I don't know, not feeling awake until about 12 p.m. at school. So that presumably you shake that off as you get older, Kat.
Yeah, well, you don't shake it off, but it's your body clock that shifts, right? So that when you were asking about sort of, you know, the timing, there is a change across our lifespan. And just really sort of broadly speaking, little children want to go to bed early, wake up early, you know, to the dismay of their parents. Teenagers then shift backwards, go to bed late and want to wake up late because they still need, I don't know, 10 hours, depending on age. And then it sort of swings forward again, and then it settles for a little while.
If people are listening and they've got teenage children who they're kind of berating to get out of bed, I mean, changeable is that? Do teenagers just simply need that amount of sleep? Like, should you just leave them to it?
Yeah, absolutely. They need their sleep, right? Like an adult does. And the younger you are, in a way, the more sleep you need. That's why, again, depending on age, they may need still 10 hours. What you really want to push for is later school start times, depending on age group. Devices like the phone or tablet, the use of that at night isn't helpful, but it's not the cause of the later bedtime. It contributes, but doesn't cause it. It's a biological change that takes place, and we should be respecting it for the well-being of our children, you know, to ensure that, you know, actually they get the education and the well-being that we want for them.
Let's talk about naps. Are they ever a good idea? Are they beneficial? Guy, the kind of infamous power nap, should we be power napping in the day?
Absolutely. Yes. 100%. I love them. So yeah, I mean, napping is, I think if we talk about sort of humans in general, there's two biological time points in which we can sleep. There's the nighttime and that sort of post-lunch period. That's because we get this sort of natural dip in our core body temperature. So it suggests that we've kind of evolved to have a little bit of a kip, you know, sort of post-lunch.
But what's crucial,
it's biological, it's a necessity. We need to do it. And there's so much research behind it proving it to be beneficial. But the crucial thing about the power nap is, what do we mean by it? So a power nap is anywhere between sort of 10 and 20 minutes. It's ideally between the time of midday and 3 p.m. when we get this natural sort of dip. One of the most important things is just to see it as an opportunity to rest.
Okay, so you could technically be somebody who gets their full 8 hours or whatever it is and a really good night's sleep, and you'd still benefit from 10 to 20 minutes in the afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would second that. You know, you don't necessarily have to sleep. So I'm not someone who naps, as in I don't fall asleep, but just allowing my body to just slow down, right? Just putting out that invitation. And yeah, just, you know, resting the eyelids, or maybe just, you know, reading a book, or in that sense, kind of doing almost nothing.
So even if you suffer from insomnia, or, you know, I can imagine there are people out there who think that napping would then make their nighttime sleep even worse, but no, that's just not the case.
Well, this is actually a really good point, and it's what defines, I think, what we've done at Sleep School, because in traditional cognitive behavior therapy, there's always been a rule which you shouldn't nap during the day. And actually, I disagreed with this. The logic behind it was, you don't want to nap during the day because it can steal from that drive ahead, you know, that sleep drive that you need to sleep well at night. But I've had clients who've not slept all night, and then they're sort of bullishly trying to keep them awake, self-awake all day, and you end up in that situation where they're experiencing mood swings, they become hyper aroused. So actually, it's a compassionate thing.
So it's almost the same benefits as kind of regular meditation or mindfulness kind of throughout the day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about sleep hygiene. This is a bit of a buzz phrase of late. What exactly is it? Is it, how important is it? And what should we all be doing to have better sleep hygiene, Kat?
So I'm not a fan of that word, if I'm completely honest. I find it very rigid, and sort of the whole idea is very rules based. So I prefer just calling them, you know, healthy sleep habits, which I can sort of amend. That's perfectly fine, because with rules, you know, I have to follow them. If I don't follow them, if I break the rules, I'm a bad person. Any thought like that is not helpful for sleep. But also this idea, I followed all the rules, and then I was, come on, sleep, where are you now? I've done everything I've been told to do. So taking this idea of more sort of healthy habits, where I create a sleep-friendly lifestyle and a sleep-friendly environment, mindful of caffeine or other stimulants. It's not about cutting them out. You know, if you enjoy a cup of coffee, then have this. But again, have a cut-off time in the afternoon. Similarly, alcohol, whichever advice you want to follow. If you have a glass of wine occasionally, or beer, you know, as part of socializing, you know, that's fine, but keep it as that, because it can negatively impact on your sleep. With the light, you want the light in the morning, you want sort of to dim it down, and generally dim down the noise from the outside world in the evening, to just allow your body to slowly switch off from the sort of working day and switch over to sort of the restful part of the day.
Let's unpack some of those things that you mentioned, because I'm sure people will have questions kind of relating to each of those things. So booze, alcohol, you know, a lot of people might have a drink to try and aid sleep. Guy, is that just not a thing?
I like how you've sort of phrased that, because that's very much what we see in our clinic, is that we will see people using alcohol, sadly, as a way. So they're using the sedative-like qualities of alcohol to perhaps numb the feelings of anxiety or to slow that racing or worrisome mind and to try and sort of help them, you know, sort of fall asleep. And the reality is it's not a long-term workable solution. And most people know that. And so many people who come to us are, you know, who are taking it, what we have to do is we have to teach them all of the tools to sort of learn how to sleep better, but then sort of how to gradually sort of come off that over a period of time, because that's what we would call a sleep aid. You know, just in general, alcohol sadly is not sleep's friend. The research is pretty sort of clear that if you're drinking alcohol near to sleep, it's going to disturb our sleep. And so again, it is always about a balance. And so I would say, you know, out of the 7 days of the week, I would say, you know, at least 4, we shouldn't have any alcohol in the system, because that will ensure that we get good night's sleep. And then if you are drinking on the other days, just try to leave as much time between sort of drinking and sleeping. I realize it makes it quite challenging.
Drinking, that's all right. We can...
As we get older as well, it seems to have greater impact on our sleep as well. So I think learning to lessen that reliance on alcohol can be a really positive move for better quality sleep.
I think you just learn that the hard way as you get older as well, sadly, don't you? What about caffeine?
We were running a sleep study, and one of our study requirements is people weren't allowed to consume caffeine. And this person said, rather unusually, that they wanted to go out onto the Brompton Road with all of the electrodes on the head and extra, you know, for a little bit of a break, and just before we were about to put them to sleep, sort of allow them to fall asleep. And they went out and then they came back and we put them to sleep and they slept. But the interesting thing is they spent most of the night sort of bouncing around in light sleep. And then in the morning, when they woke up, I said, can I just check, did you have any caffeine? He said, oh yes, when I nipped out, I went and had a double espresso. And, you know, which obviously for my sake, I'd just been awake all night watching this person sleep, trying to do some research. And what it highlighted to me back then was the fact that this person had actually managed to fall asleep okay, but just hadn't managed to achieve any decent quality sleep. And I think, so to answer that question, for anyone who can have a double espresso and fall asleep, yes, they might be able to, but it's not particularly good. We do need to limit the amount of caffeine that we have in our system. Try to switch to herbal or decaf alternatives or caffeine-free alternatives from midday onwards.
And decaf really works. You know, people are always saying that decaf has loads of caffeine in it still, but no, you think it's a good enough substitute?
Decaf certainly still has caffeine in it, and I had a decaf coffee this morning and I'm still buzzing off it. So that's because I don't drink a huge amount of caffeine these days. How much caffeine you consume will determine, you know, sort of how much it affects you.
Kat, is sugar a trigger as well for a bad night's sleep?
For some people it is. So again, it depends on the sensitivity. So it can then make sort of, yeah, more alert. But it's not just this short term, it's actually the long term effects of the sugar consumption, particularly in the evening, because it messes up with our insulin levels. And then over time, you know, can contribute to a diabetes, as well as reduce the quality of the sleep. And we know that poor sleep or lack of sleep also can contribute to diabetes. So it's kind of a double whammy that you get there. So I guess it's a bit like with what Guy just said about the caffeine, it's just being aware when you consume it. It's getting that balance, you know, into our lives.
And learning what works for you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah.
whilst we're on the subject of things that can affect sleep, tech, we've got to talk about tech, about blue lights, phones, laptop screens. Guy, again, is it personal or should everybody just be taking time out before bed away from their screens?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a sort of, you know, one of the simplest, most powerful ways in which people can improve their sleep in the modern world. And the simple fact is that we know we are spending more and more time on our screens. An average adult now spends about 11 hours in front of screens. And you touched on blue light there, which is always sort of, you know, sort of picked up on the fact that blue light is the same wavelength as sunlight. And as Kat was sort of mentioning, you know, sunlight plays a really important role, or the light dark cycle plays a really important role in our sleep, in regulating our sleep and wake cycle. And so, you know, sunlight helps to wake us up, darkness helps to trigger sleep. When you're sat in bed looking at some sort of device, well, then what's happening is that light is hitting light sensitive cells in your eyes, and that's relaying to your brain, tricking it that it actually thinks it needs to be awake. And so it confuses your entire circadian rhythm. We want to be appreciating the fact that we've evolved to live on a planet that rotates between light and dark. We want to respect the sort of a gradual darkening down, sort of a couple of hours before going to bed. But it's not just all about the blue light as well. It's also the brightness, the intensity of the screen. So, you know, simple things people can do is just reduce down the brightness of their phones and their tablets and their TVs, switch or schedule their blue light filters. But also, if we just spent a little bit less time on our screens as well, because you also get the emotional and cognitive stimulation from them. So having a little bit of a digital detox every single day at the end of the day, I think is a very healthy thing, not just for our sleep, but also for our mental health.
Let's talk about different types of sleep problems. I think we'll get to kind of insomnia and I suppose more clinical issues in a moment. Everybody I know suffers from a different type of sleep issue. So let's start with people who can't drop off, or people who take an hour to fall asleep. Why is that, Kat, and what can they do to improve that?
So what is happening when you're lying there? For many people, it will be a racing mind, replaying the day or the next day. And with that come uncomfortable in sort of emotions. And we often sort of get sucked in and caught up in these experiences, in these thoughts. And what we're teaching in the clinic is a different way of responding to these thoughts, is a different way of handling these thoughts, that you don't get absorbed in them, right? That you learn instead to step back. And that sort of mindfulness inspired practices that are there to help you step back from what's going on and remain in a calmer place.
So go and give us a hack for anyone who is listening to this podcast and is lying in bed tonight having this issue. What can they do? A kind of a rough example of something they can try, Guy, to drop off a little bit easier.
One of the simplest ways to help people, say, manage, you know, the most common issue, which is a racing mind, is what I call getting out of your head and into your bed. What we find is that the mind is sort of racing all over the place, and we're struggling to settle it. And so what we want to do is find something which is going to ground us. So use a grounding exercise in the moment. And so a really easy thing to do is to notice our sense of touch. And so that's what I mean by getting out of your head and into your bed. So we might get them to describe where they can feel the bed in contact with their body. So it might be, I can feel the duvet touching my toes. I can feel, and they slowly scan up. I can feel the mattress on my calves. I can feel, you know, the sheet on my knees, and, you know, all the way up to, I can feel the pillow on my cheek, for example. And yes, their mind's going to race off and go, yeah, but if I don't fall asleep soon, tomorrow's going to be a disaster. And you sort of go, okay, thanks, mind. That's great. But hey, I'm just going to come back to, you know, just centering myself with this, on this simple connection between the bed and the body. And what we're wanting to do there is we're cultivating what we call psychological flexibility, which is a sort of a fancy term for saying we're opening up someone's willingness to experience the thoughts that might be showing up as they show up moment by moment. So we're wanting to change that relationship. So big difference is, and this is we've pioneered the use of something called acceptance and commitment therapy, is it's not trying to get rid of the thoughts. It's not trying to change the thoughts into something more positive. It's more just changing the way they relate to it. They're going, okay, I'm open to having these thoughts in this moment and being awake. And by doing that, that's where you start to tune into that message which you're sending the brain, which is actually it's safe, and with safety comes sleep.
So you're not fighting your own thoughts, essentially.
Exactly.
What about people, I'm in this camp, who fall asleep quite naturally and then maybe half an hour into sleep, an hour into sleep, wake up quite suddenly with a jolt. Is that just your rhythm?
So waking up relatively soon after you've just fallen asleep, and as you said, sort of a jolt, and often there's a sensation of sort of a surge of adrenaline, or sometimes clients say sort of electricity. It sounds like there's activity. And I think the first thing there is a little bit what Guy was just saying about the grounding, is to just orientate yourself, because it can be like, whoa, what just happened, right? And a bit confused, surprised, maybe a little bit anxious about what just happened. And so just coming back into bed, again, into the present moment. And I would say just take a breath in and a breath out. Okay, let's just go breath in, breath out, and then go back to, so what's happening? What am I experiencing inside my body, right? And so this time it's more about going inside and just sort of almost looking and scanning inside the body what's just happened. And your mind will probably have, it's been saying something all along. So, you know, checking in with the mind. Okay, yeah, thanks for your, you know, possible explanation or prediction. What about what will happen next? I'm just going to come back to the body, to the breath, and then in a way come back to the bed, you know, again, grounding yourself within the bed.
Is it the same for people who wake up at 3, 4 and are suddenly wide awake? Why do we feel like that? Why does that happen when you're like, oh my God, I'm so awake right now?
If we take our sort of insomnia clients, they've got this trained response where their brain now sort of associates nighttime wakefulness with sort of struggle and anxiety and fear. And, you know, they can wake up and suddenly be on red alert. And, you know, can be, their brain can be going a million miles an hour. They can feel sort of, you know, their rate, you know, the heart is racing, etc. And so that can explain how you can, you know, you can wake up at 3 or 4 and be in that place. But actually, you know, even if you don't suffer from insomnia, that 3 to 4 a.m. slot is a really vulnerable time point, because what we find is when we fall asleep, we've got a brain chemical called adenosine, which is this kind of sleepy brain chemical, which kind of muddles and fuddles the brain. It helps to sort of sedate us in a way, and that kind of helps us to fall off. But by the time we get to 3 or 4 a.m., that's kind of gone. And so you're waking up perhaps out of a normal sleep cycle, and your brain, you know, just thinks it's hilarious to suddenly go, all right, what have we got to worry about? And so it can suddenly be going a million miles an hour. You know, crucially, as Kat was sort of touching on, how you respond to these awakenings is absolutely fundamental, because, you know, if you respond in that sort of fighting sort of approach, you know, if you're challenging, if you're responding by grabbing your phone and looking at it, well, that's just going to put you into a state of active wakefulness. You're sort of moving yourself further away from sleep. What we want to sort of teach people is how to respond in a way that cultivates quiet wakefulness, this sort of almost stepping stone back to allowing you to fall back to sleep.
So you shouldn't get up, read a book, make a cup of tea, any of the above?
There's lots of traditional advice which says, you know, if you've been awake for, you know, more than 15 minutes, you should get up and, you know, do something. The last thing you want to do is lie in bed struggling. And, you know, we totally agree that you shouldn't be lying in bed struggling, but we disagree that you should get out of bed and go and do something. And the you know, my big issue with that is if that can sort of create a new sleep association, which the night is about getting up every 15 minutes and going and doing something. And so I'm much more keen to teach people how to stay in bed and rest, because you get so much benefit from actually just resting, but then changing the way people relate to that wakefulness. And this is the paradoxical bit about, you know, sort of using acceptance and commitment therapy, is that we're increasing people's willingness to be awake, and by doing that, removing the obstacles in the way of sleep.
Got you. Okay, I like that. Kat, we've all been there where we've got a big day the next day, you know, you've got a big meeting, you've got something you're nervous for, a big event, something you're excited for. And obviously that can prohibit good sleep or sleep at all. Is that psychosomatic? I'm guessing it's partly adrenaline and all of the kind of things we've touched on, but is it also in your brain, you're like, I might not sleep tonight, or it would be really detrimental if I don't sleep tonight. So therefore you don't, like, are we all just getting ourselves into a really bad cycle on those occasions?
I mean, getting worked up a little bit to some degree. Yeah, you get caught up, you know, in the thoughts, in this imagination of the next day, how you would like it to be, but how you may not end up in this perfect position if you don't get enough sleep, right? Mm-hmm. And then the lack of sleep suddenly becomes a threat. And that threat, although it's in a way just in your head, it's an imaginary, right? Rather than a bear or a lion standing in front of you, your body then reacts to this idea of a threat in the exact same way. And that's when tension follows adrenaline, maybe cortisol, anxiety, all of these uncomfortable sort of emotions. And then we realize, A, we're not asleep, but we also have suddenly all this uncomfortable sort of emotion in our body, all these body sensations we don't want. Thoughts of, oh, they are getting in the way of me sleeping and being this perfect human the next day. And then we start to struggle with what's showing up in the body. And that, unfortunately, just sucks us in even more into that fight position and actually keeps adding fuel to the fire. The first step there is, again, is to notice, ah, my mind is thinking about the next day. It's making a prediction, right? And that is a prediction in that moment. At 2 a.m., me thinking about how I will look at 10 if I haven't slept is a prediction. It can happen. It may not happen. But truth of the matter is, right now, reality actually is I'm lying in bed and I'm awake, full stop. And so learning to come back to that reality in sort of a non-judgmental way. That's what we're teaching.
My boss, Georgie, her advice is always that, you know, no one ever died from a bad night's sleep. You know, you can function the next day. And I've always found that a really helpful tip. And I lie there and I tell myself, well, so what? Okay, so you'll be tired tomorrow. You know, personally, that helps me. You're the expert. Briefly, can we touch on insomnia? I mean, how do you know, what exactly is insomnia? And how do you know if you suffer from that as opposed to just kind of bad sleep habits, Guy?
Yeah, so insomnia just means difficulty sleeping. Okay, so, you know, everyone on the planet will experience some form of insomnia at some point in their lives. But when we talk about chronic insomnia, there's lots of different definitions. You know, I could give you the clinical definition, which is experiencing sort of a difficulty falling asleep. That generally means taking longer than sort of 30 minutes, whether that's falling asleep at the beginning of the night or back to sleep in the middle of the night for a period of 3 or more days per week, lasting longer than 3 months, where it begins to impact your sort of your daily life. It's affecting your mood and your ability to cope. But, you know, at Sleep School, we definitely talk about the sort of the vicious cycle whereby it's the worry about not sleeping, and you experience poor sleep, you begin to worry about not sleeping, and the more you worry, the less you sleep, and the less you sleep, the more you worry. That's one of the sort of the main components of insomnia, and it's, you know, very much connected to anxiety, and it's you know, very much what we do at Sleep School.
Again, kind of, are there ways to manage insomnia oneself, or should you be seeking professional advice? To what extent can you sort of cure yourself of it with those practices that we talked about?
There's no reason why people can't manage, you know, insomnia themselves. Mm. And as I said, most people will go through perhaps a short bout of insomnia connected to a stressful period or event in their lives. And once that stressor disappears, then their sort of their sleep will return back to normal. Where I would say, you know, people probably want to seek help is where it's become persistent. And what typically happens is when we can't sleep, we seek to try and control it. And I've got this phrase, which is, you know, if you ask a normal sleeper what they do to sleep, they'll tell you they do nothing. If you ask an insomniac, they'll give you a list as long as their arm. And basically that's this controlling behavior. What happens is we start to sort of change all of our behaviors. We'll start to do way more sleep hygiene, for example, and we start to adopt certain, you know, sort of sleep aids, using alcohol, perhaps, you know, taking medication, whatever it may be. This is where the so-called solutions become part of the problem. And that's where, you know, I would definitely say, you know, coming to visit Sleep School, because it's now got to a place where your brain is now learning to associate the nighttime with struggle, fear, and anxiety. And what we'll see is many of our clients will be perhaps, you know, maybe feeling sort of sleepy in the evenings, feeling tired, but as soon as they move towards the bedroom, suddenly they become wide awake, suddenly their heart races. And that can be, you know, really scary, because they think, well, I don't understand why this is happening. You know, normally, you know, I would walk into the bedroom and feel calm and relaxed, and now I'm feeling like I'm about to give a public presentation. You know, or it can be the fact that you fall asleep fine, but again, like we said, you wake up in the middle of the night and you can feel on red alert. And that's where I think, you know, having a trained therapist is going to help to navigate your way out of that effectively and get you sleeping naturally.
To undo those associations, presumably.
Yes.
Can I ask you about supplements and sleep aids and kind of debunking them, I suppose? Is there anything one can take that helps catch?
I mean, if your body is deficient in something, right, then it is good to get a supplement to top up these levels. But then I think the long-term use of these supplements or the things that can set up sort of a reliance only if I have, I don't know, my cup of chamomile tea or my magnesium, then I will be able to sleep. That's unhelpful, because if you ever run out of them, you're really in a dire situation. To top something up, absolutely fine. And occasionally use something, you know, because you like the taste, for example, that's fine. But long term, when I work with clients, you know, often their wish is, I don't want to rely on this supplement.
If one has an answer to that question, whether it's some kind of medication or whether it's some kind of environmental thing, that's problematic. You know, you shouldn't only be able to sleep if you're wearing, I don't know, a certain set of pajamas or whatever it may be. Yep. You need to be able to sleep. I don't mean standing up on the tube. In a relatively kind of pared back setting,
we say have a high level of sleep flexibility.
Lovely, thank you. That's what I was going for.
Because what we see is that when you can't sleep, you become very inflexible around your sleep. You start to go, you know, I have to have the right bedroom environment. You know, it's got to be pitch black. It's got to be perfect temperature. It's got to be noise free. I've got to be wearing this. You know, my partner has got to be in this position. You know, it can become incredibly controlling. You can change the whole of your life right down to, well, I can't see my friends. I won't go and stay away. I won't go on holiday, you know, in order to try and get these specific parameters. And you can see that's what breeds that inflexibility. And with inflexibility brings, you know, sort of hyper arousal and anxiety and insomnia.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any gadgets you can buy that can improve? And, you know, I'm talking things like the Lumi light. We've talked about daylight and how helpful that is. Like, are there things out there that you rate to help a good night's sleep?
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is that the Sleep School app.
Well, naturally.
I mean, I think you mentioned a moment ago about, you know, can people help themselves to sleep better by themselves? And I mean, what we've tried to do is condense all of the sort of the knowledge and tools and therapy that we've given over sort of decades to people into a sort of an app-based format that educates people about their sleep. So, you know, it's not a tracking device. It's not trying to sort of measure their sleep. It's more of a tool about providing education to help them make the, you know, positive behavior change required for them to improve their sleep naturally. But if we look at other products, you know, sort of sunrise lamps, for example, they can, you know, we were talking about alarms. I'm not a fan of a traditional alarm clock, but certainly an alarm, you know, a sunrise lamp, which is gradually flooding the room full of light and pulling someone out of a sleep-wake cycle, that can actually be a nice way to wake up. So I definitely sort of encourage that. You know, the other big one is sleep trackers. I struggle with sleep trackers. They do have pros, which is that for some individuals, they've certainly helped them to understand that relationship between perhaps some of their lifestyle factors and their sleep. So they've gone, okay, you know, when I drink too much alcohol or drink too much caffeine or I'm too stressed, then my sleep seems to be disturbed. The major problem we have with them is the accuracy is still not sort of clinical grade, and actually they've sort of given birth to a new sleep disorder, orthoinsomnia, so obsessive heightened sleep anxiety due to obsessive tracking. So, you know, when it comes to our insomnia clients, absolutely we say, you know, sort of don't track, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always stayed clear for exactly that reason. I know I'd become obsessed, and that can't be good, can it? We're running out of time, so I'm going to hit you with some quick fire final questions. So one sentence answers, please, if you can. Kat, do dreams matter? Are dreams ever indicative of your quality of sleep?
Not of your quality of sleep. I think they're much more indicative of what's going on in your life. Not as a one-to-one, you know, a picture. But it can highlight that maybe, you know, something is stressing you out, or, you know, anxiety provoking, that something isn't going right. So I think it's worth being interested in your dreams. And it's more about sort of the overall message rather than sort of individual elements in that.
Guy, can you catch up on sleep over a weekend?
You can if you just get a small amount of sleep. So, you know, the crucial thing, if you have a long weekend line, which I'm imagining what you're talking about, then the problem is that can cause circadian disruption. So it basically knocks everything out of sync. And so that impacts your digestive system and every other biological process. But, you know, having a sort of a short lie-in, so, you know, sort of 30 minutes or maybe up to an hour, you can benefit from that. And that will help to repay a little bit of debt. Yes.
Katerina, how bad is it to hit the snooze button in the morning?
How bad?
Pretty bad.
It just, you know, I would say, you know, push it back to the latest point and then just get up. So make sure you get that sleep rather than reducing that quality of the sleep.
Guy, finally, what's more important, quality or quantity, when it comes to sleep?
Both.
Great.
Sorry, that was a really short answer.
Good, I love it. That's perfect. Guy, you've told us about the Sleep School app. Is that free to download? Do you have to pay? What more do we need to know?
Sleep School app has a 7-day free trial. So you can access all of the series and courses within the app, including our 30-day Overcoming Insomnia course, which might be relevant to a lot of your listeners. And then it's $29.99 for an annual subscription after that.
And if you feel like you need a little bit more assistance, where do you go? How do you begin the process with Sleep School?
Just go to sleepschool.org. And you'll be able to find out everything that we do. So if you'd like to, you know, book a private clinic, for example, just go to sleepschool.org and you can just sort of book there, or you can book via the app as well.
Perfect. All right. I'm off to download the app. Thank you both so much, Guy and Kat. That was so informative. I feel a little tired now. I think it's got me obsessing over sleep. It's a bit early for a nap. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us. If you have any questions, do email podcast@sheerlux.com. You know we love hearing from you. Don't forget also, please, to rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.